You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast.
That career average or walk percentage is actually higher than it was last year. Like, so he regressed from his first year at the majors. Not much, but there wasn't much that he could regress without it going completely to zero.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I really thought that putting the bad teams first, like going in reverse order of record, was a really good idea, but I'm starting the new year off pretty depressed.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, just kind of watching y'all's little RotoWire Dynasty Invitational, seeing what's going on there, and just living life, my man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of a good topic for this episode because for those who are newer to us, we're doing team previews every day during the month of January. So from the 1st to the 30th, you'll get a different team preview. You'll also get a prospect minute. And this may be one of the few ones that the team preview is actually shorter than the prospect minute. Because we were talking about the Chicago White Sox, and holy crap, is this a bad team.
We're sorry. We're very sorry for this. You know, it's necessary, but we're sorry.
I really thought that putting the bad teams first, like going in reverse order of record, was a really good idea, but I'm starting the new year off pretty depressed by doing that.
Yeah. Not necessarily the best move, but it's the only move to make. We got to just get them out of the way. It's like somebody that wants to hear the bad news first as opposed to the good news. Like, you're hearing the bad news first. It gets better from here.
It's like getting, shots or immunizations when you're in the military. They don't just give you, like, one a day for, like, a week. They just give you 20 at once and hope you survive.
This is really going to hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So we are talking about the Chicago White Sox. Before we do, remind everybody, you can rate review us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star review, really helps us out. It also gets you entered in to maybe get into one of our listener leagues or win some other free stuff we'll be getting, be giving out all season long and all preseason long. You can follow Mike on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. So let's just jump right in, pull the Band-Aid off. Let's talk about the Chicago White Sox. Jose Abreu, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's all right. He's not bad. I last year going into draft season, I wasn't too high on him. And really, it was just because the upside really wasn't there for him to be a top 5 first baseman or whatever he had been drafted as the couple years prior. And even despite bouncing back last year, what did he end up being on the first base player radar? Let's see. Somewhere in the vicinity of 4th. So he bounced back, became the 4th best first baseman based on hitting 30 home runs. This year, I think that we're going to see probably the same amount of production, at least home run-wise. But then the RBIs, I think, could definitely take a dip. He has 100 RBIs in every season he's played in. But this year's White Sox team, if you just want to take a gander at it and kind of be shocked and awed by what is on their team, I think it's pretty safe to say he won't hit for 100 RBIs or he might hit for 100 RBIs if he's on another team. So I'd say the main reason to buy somebody like Abreu is just for the stability that you've gotten from him the last few years and the possibility of him being traded to another team, which, you know, more than likely would be a much better offense overall. So I don't mind Abreu for this year. I was, you know, again, down on him last year, but I think that we're going to see him probably stay relatively the same that he has been the last few years of his career. And there's nothing wrong with that. So no problems with Abreu. I just think that he needs to be on another team, and he probably will be, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can bank 30 home runs. I think he can bank 290 to 300 average. I think you can... I think that's about it. Like, I don't know what his runs and RBI situation is going to look like. If he's batting third, you know, he's probably going to take a dip in RBIs. If he's batting fourth, he's probably going to take a dip in run. I don't know. It just – it doesn't feel like a great situation, but he does feel like he's got a really safe floor, which I think is important.
Yeah, 31 years old. I mean, it's not like he's aging.
So, I mean, I think there's certain things you can bank on pretty easily. You know, you're going to bank he's going to get 80-80. You know, maybe 90-90 in terms of runs and RBIs, and 30 home runs with a really nice average. And I think that is pretty valuable still in today's game, especially the average, because most of the guys who are hitting for 30, 40 home runs aren't hitting 300.
Yeah.
So let's move over and talk about Moncada. Is this the year Moncada breaks out?
I don't know if it's the year he breaks out. I will say this. He's definitely going to give you a bump in on-base percentage league. So if you play in OBP formats, definitely give him a couple rounds notch up. He's not going to be a batting average asset, at least right now, based on what we saw last year and, you know, almost 200 at-bats. He had a 37% strikeout rate. And even if he, you know, ends up improving it a little bit, I think that he always will have strikeouts in his profile. So he hit a decent amount of fly balls. I think that that could trend up as well. But the stolen bases is what I was most worried about. And we saw only 3 stolen bases from him last year. I think if you are willing to kind of, I guess, risk a draft pick on somebody that has the upside to steal 25 to 30 bases and hit 15 to 20, maybe even 25 home runs, then I'm absolutely on board with that. For this year, I don't think we're going to see that. I don't think we're going to see a breakout this year, but I do think we'll see a couple of kind of notches forward with him and his overall skill set. 23 years old, I think we'll end up, you know, seeing a pretty decent fantasy commodity out of this. I don't know where he went in your early mod drafts, but I bet it was probably higher than he probably should have gone. Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't, but if you give me a second, I will find it for you.
Yeah, I would say if he's anywhere lower than like a top 150 pick, then that's where I kind of draw the line. I'd put him probably somewhere in the 150 range, maybe 140 if I'm feeling a little bit aggressive with it. But outside of that, I think that, you know, long term, we know what his upside could be in on-base percentage formats. He definitely gets a notch up, a couple notches up for this year. But in terms of his overall batting average and home runs and stolen base opportunities, I think we'll end up being just a notch up from last year. And, you know, last year he ended up with 8 home runs, 3 stolen bases, and 200 at bats. I think that over a full season, we could probably project somewhere between 15 to 20 home runs and 15 to 20 stolen bases with the upside for more. So that's where he is.
He went 101st.
Huh. Yeah, it's a bit rich for me. A little bit rich.
It's too high for me, too. Though, I do think he's the type kind of guy that, well, you know, in your traditional 5x5 leagues, he definitely is going to hurt in batting average, because I wouldn't project him above 240, 245.
Agree.
But I definitely think he's a guy that could go 15-15.
Yes.
You know, and maybe that's even a little bit low. But I would probably, when I do my projections, I think I'm going to project him to go 15-15 with a 240 average. If you're a guy like me that tends to discount batting average to begin with, that's not a bad line for a second baseman. So, you know, again, the runs, RBIs may be an issue in Chicago, especially before guys, you know, some of their top prospects start really making their appearances. And, you know, maybe we'll see some of those guys come up over the summer, and maybe we won't see them until September. But I'm not on board with a top 100 or top 125 draft spot, but if he falls outside of the top 150, he's a guy I might be willing to take a gamble on.
Yeah, the problem with me is the stolen bases. Like, if I knew prior to the season starting that he was going to get 35 attempts, then I'd feel a little bit more comfortable with it. But the White Sox were, you know, bottom 8 in stolen base attempts per game last year, and I just don't know if that's going to change going into this year as well. So I think that this is, again, going to be a team that at large is going to be trying to take a couple of notches forward. And with that, their best player, or, you know, potentially their best player, Yoan Moncada, probably won't be asked to do too much. But at the same time, really bad teams like that, they are allowed to kind of move around a little bit more and have a little bit more leverage whenever they play, because they're so bad that they're trying to work on things anyway. So they have kind of a little bit better opportunity for that. But at the end of the day,
they manufacture runs. So maybe he is a guy that they let run a little bit more coming into this year. I mean, he had 17 stolen bases in AAA last year. So, 20 between the two levels. Maybe now that he's got a half season or, a third of a season under his belt, maybe they go, okay, we'll let you run a little bit, stay healthy. I think the draft cost, if he continues to be a top 125 pick, is going to price me out. So,
yeah, I mean, if a shallow format, I'd be willing to take him around that spot just to see if he ends up, because he has the potential to be one of the few guys that goes 2020 or 2030, and that's valuable. In terms of right now, I think that it's better and less aggressive to go with what you were saying, 15-15, and I think that that's probably the better way to go with it. But there is a substantial amount of upside here. But if we're taking a stance on it, I'd say avoid at 101, but maybe pick him up if he's like a 130 pick, 140, something like that.
Okay. Let's move on to a guy who had a breakout kind of season in Chicago last year. It's Avisel Garcia, who I don't think people may think he's a bit older than he is. He's only 26 years old, hit for 18 home runs, stole 5 bases, but it was the triple slash that was really interesting, 330, 380, 506. So what do you expect from Avisel Garcia this year?
Well, he did a really good job of making better contact last year. And, pretty much four straight seasons prior, he hadn't exceeded a, 76% contact rate. Last year, 79% obviously helped him out, and it helped lift his BABIP a little bit. He had a career high 390 BABIP last year and 513 at bats. That obviously fueled his 327 batting average. He hits a lot of ground balls. So the power of the 18 home runs is, I think, where you'll kind of see it stay. I don't think you will see much more power out of this profile. If people are expecting, since he is still young, to end up getting more power in there, I don't really believe that's the case unless we see some type of substantial shift in his batted ball profile and his power metrics. I think we're going to be seeing relatively the same power that we've seen the last couple of years. With that said, I think that he has a baseline to hit somewhere between 260, 270 if he maintains relatively the same batted ball or the relatively same plate discipline and plate skills that we've seen, at least last year and the last few years overall. But in general, I think that this is a guy that's going to hit, anywhere between 260, 280 with 15 to 20 home runs. And in that White Sox lineup, probably will be deprived of run scoring opportunities and such, but he'll chip in a couple stolen bases. I don't love the profile, but I do think that there is some room to grow. I just don't think it'll necessarily be in the power much. So with that said, I think he's more of a third, fourth outfielder type, and I have no problem with him. I just think that he's somebody that's really going to be what he's been the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm not extremely excited about it.
I agree.
Don't get me wrong, the 330 was great. Like, a 330 average is fantastic. Obviously, the 392 BABIP is carried some of that. So maybe he's
a lot of that.
maybe he's more like a 275, 280 hitter. And a 270, 280 hitter that hits you 15 to 20 home runs isn't super exciting in today's game. So,
no, when your average batter is hitting over 20 home runs, it's really like you're buying Avisel Garcia for average, and last year was an anomaly in that. There's no way I would bet anything that he doesn't hit 330 again. I would bet probably anything that he doesn't hit 300 again. He's only done it once prior, and that was in a very limited amount of time in 2012. So I would say chances are high that he ends up finishing with way less batting average, which propelled him to a top 25 finish in outfielders and on the ESPN player rater, but not much speed, no real advantage in power. And the one advantage he has in batting average, he's probably going to drop a big amount in. And then on top of that, you have a lineup that is deprived of a lot of big hitters. So I'd say that this is, I agree, not very exciting.
All right, let's move on to Wellington Castillo. We talked about him when he signed in October, November, November, I guess. So we don't have to go too in depth with him. Are you on board with Castillo in Chicago?
Yeah, the same thing I said back a month and a half, whatever it might be, is I think that this is pretty much a lateral move from the Orioles and other teams that he's been on. He's going to once again be in a favorable ballpark. And while the lineup isn't great, we don't really buy somebody like Castillo to be a run and RBI manufacturer for us. We more or less buy him so that he can hit us 20 home runs. And I think that he has every opportunity to do that with the White Sox. He ended up finishing as a top eight catcher last year on the ESPN Player Rater. I can easily see him do that again. This position is filthy, the catcher position, and he's somebody that you don't really have to spend a high draft pick on. So I like Castillo. He's a safe option, somebody that's not going to hurt you, and you don't have to pay a premium price for somebody that's probably going to do the same thing he's done the last couple of years, which is be a top 10 catcher. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I think he is – you don't have to spend a whole lot on him. Which is nice. I think, he wasn't going super high in my mock drafts, so I wouldn't expect to have to pay too much moving from Baltimore to Chicago. I think it's a decent fit. You know, with how bad that lineup is, he's going to bat in the middle of it, so a pretty good chance for some RBI, a good RBI production with Moncada, Abreu, and Garcia kind of batting in front of him. I think he's like a pretty nice low-end catcher one, high-end catcher two. In most formats. So I'm going to have a number of shares of Wellington Castillo. All right, let's talk about Tim Anderson, and then I'm just going to ask you if there's anybody else interesting on this team. And Tim Anderson is only interesting on this team because of his, I think, his previous prospect pedigree, because, I mean, he hasn't really done what we thought he would do at the major league level, especially last year where he stole 15 bases, but he hit 17 home runs. Like, I don't know who Tim Anderson really is. 257 average is okay. It's, not a detriment, and it's not necessarily helpful. But a 276 on-base percentage. So if you're using him in an OBP format, that hurts. What are you doing with Tim Anderson?
Yeah, he stole 15 bases last year. 9 of them were in September, so... Definitely not a great year overall. You probably were out of it by that time if you had Anderson anyways. It's my thing about Anderson is this. He is going to need to up his contact rate immensely for him to have a good enough batting average that we can use him in 5x5. The stolen bases can certainly get better. And I already talked about the opportunities for the White Sox earlier when we were talking about Moncada. But for us to be okay with Anderson as a starting shortstop in 5x5 formats without OBP, he needs to up his contact rate and, do a little bit better job of having a better batted ball profile too. So right now, things look really bleak for him. If you're going to kind of hold steady based on his September last year and hope for better times, then I can understand that. But also in September, you're seeing a lot worse pitching and there's just a lot more favorable matchups in that time of year. So I don't really bank a lot in his September where he hit, 339 with those 9 stolen bases, 3 home runs. But the positive is the power went up last year. 17 home runs is not something I expected from him initially. But he's getting older now. He's going to be 25 this season, the whole year. And if he's not going to steal bases consistently, then we have a real problem. He's not even a startable asset in mixed league. So I would say, last year he finished as a top 20 shortstop. If we see a little bit of improvement in his contact, we might see him hit 270, 275. And this is a guy that always used to hit for batting average in the minor leagues. The hard contact isn't there, but if I'm banking on his stat line for this year, I think we're going to see, once again, somewhere in the vicinity of 15 home runs and then hope for better stolen bases. So I'd say 20 plus is probably something I'd be willing to write down in my projection for him, but I wouldn't feel great about it with a 270-something average. And that's going to play, but I am really worried long-term about Anderson, at least about what I thought he would be, because I thought the walk percentage was going to be bad, but I never thought it would be this bad. He has a career 2.5 walk percentage. That's just not going to cut it. So,
yeah, and that's career average or walk percentage is actually higher than it was last year. Like, so
yeah,
he regressed from his first year at the majors. Not much, but there wasn't much that it could regress without it going completely to zero.
Yeah, he doesn't control the plate. He's not a good plate skills guy, and he never really has been, but he's always had pretty high BABIPs in the minor leagues, so you can kind of count on his batting average. But the power was the surprise from last year. If he keeps it up, that's awesome, but really the stolen bases is the main thing. If he can start stealing again, then that's where his value will come from. But I don't know where he went in your drafts. If he ended up going at a pretty reasonable spot, like outside the top 200 or something, I'm willing to jump on that. But if he didn't, then I'm probably going to avoid.
I'm looking it up right now. Tim Anderson went 182.
Yeah, I mean, that's like right on the cusp. It's like right on the borderline. I don't hate that price. I just don't, you know, I don't love it either. I probably would do it, but there's a lot of risk here with Anderson, a lot more than there was a couple of years ago. So
I'm trying to find some middle infielders around the same spot. Zach Cozart, 175.
He's in a worse situation now than he was last year.
Ian
but
Kinsler.
I'd rather go both of them over Anderson.
Let's see. Marwin Gonzalez.
I'd probably go Anderson just because I think he'll play more.
Paul DeJong.
I'm going Anderson.
I don't know that I would go Anderson over any of these guys, honestly.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people give Billy Hamilton shit, and they're like, oh, you can't steal first. Like, Tim Anderson is way worse.
Yeah. Like, he's way worse play skills-wise.
Billy Hamilton stole 7% of the time, and while that's not, like, encouraging at all, you know, when you're hitting 247, like, that to me, like, that's three times what Tim Anderson did last year. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just I don't
But Tim
want...
Anderson is part of a group, like, with Ozzie Albies, Orlando Arcia, who are mainly stolen base guys. Mind you, Ozzie Albies, I think, is going to be a stud. We haven't got to him yet, but if we ever talk about Albies, I'm very high on Albies.
I am, too.
But Arcia is probably a good comparison with Anderson, and he's probably somebody that we can probably look at as the type of guy that will progress this year compared to last year. And I think Anderson has the opportunity to do that as well. He's going to be on a rebuilding team. He's going to once again be able to work things out. The plate skills are never going to be great, but we have seen guys do really good things for fantasy despite having mediocre plate skills. So I'm probably being way too much of an apologist for Anderson because I was so high on him in the minor leagues, but this is a big year for him. If he ends up having a really down year again, I think it's probably time for us to kind of accept what the reality is. But I do think that there's still a good amount of upside left. And
this is the problem when prospect people and just regular people like oogle over minor league statistics.
It's true.
You know,
true.
And one of the reasons why you and Matt talk about all the time, your favorite tool is the hit tool. Because,
yes,
like, you need to be able to get on base if you're going to utilize speed. And Tim Anderson has never really been able to just get on base. He doesn't have a great hit tool. He does not walk. You know, he's just fast. And, like, don't get me wrong, fast is good and can be very good. But you have to have some other skill in order to parlay being fast into being a good fantasy asset. And I just don't see that yet from Tim Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, he had in his, you know, in his minor league career, he only had one time where he had a higher than 3% walk rate. So, like, this is not new. Mm-hmm. What is new is the stolen base opportunities, because in Double A he stole 49 bases. He probably got the green light every time. But we've seen his stolen base opportunities regress, and that's probably in part to the fact that he's just not getting on base. And this, again, mm-hmm, this isn't new, but 2% is just not going to cut it. Like, if you're only getting a walk 2% of the time, then that pretty much takes him out of being a leadoff hitter at any time, makes him a 7-8-9 hitter. And on this team, being a 7-8-9 hitter is going to really be bad for your RBI opportunities. It's going to be really bad for any opportunities, really. So right now, while it looks really bleak, I think it's important to see if his stolen base opportunities go up, we might really see a nice year from him. But if we don't see them go up, then I think that this is a guy that we'll probably have to avoid for the upcoming years.
And this is a failure of the White Sox developmental team.
Yes.
Because at no point, let's just go from high A on. He reached high A after a short stint in rookie ball, reached high A in 2014. From that moment on, he never had a walk percentage over 4.4%. Like, but they let him keep advancing.
Yep.
Like, at no point did they go, you need to learn better pitch recognition. You need to learn how to take a walk and be more patient. You know, you need to just stop slapping at everything. But at no point did they do that. And now he's paying for it as a major leaguer. And you know what? Honestly, I kind of feel bad for the kid.
Yeah. And he has natural contact ability. Like, his swing is great. His ability to make contact is great. The problem is he just doesn't have great pitch recognition. And yeah, Matt and I always talk about plate skills. This is a guy that if we were looking at his profile today, we would say this is somebody that we're going to avoid. And, you know, honestly, at this point, it's pretty much been justified. So right now, again, like, he's somebody that I'm really tantalized by based on the speed, and because speed is just something that's gone in fantasy right now. But at the same time, if he's not getting on base and having the ability to steal, then his best asset is not being used, and we just can't use that for fantasy.
If he could walk 6% of the time, you're looking at a guy who could be stealing 35 bases, at the major league level, which would be super valuable at shortstop. I've got to see it first, and I just don't believe it. Here are some middle infielders going after him, according to the mock drafts that I did late last year, that I would take over him. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. Jose Peraza. I would take Jose Peraza over him.
I agree. Although they have about the same walk percentage, probably.
But I feel better about Peraza, unfortunately. Though that one's close. Marcus Semien. You have to think about this?
Semien. I mean, I don't know about his playing time regularly, but
who's going to play over Semien?
I mean, they have multiple guys that have come up now. Matt Chapman, they have Franklin Barreto, who's probably going to be up
Chapman's
all year.
Chapman's not playing shortstop.
No, he's playing third, but that's where else
play
would
third.
You move him? Where else would you move him? Move him second, I guess, but
why
did they just renew Lowry? I don't know.
No, they're going to put Barreto at second, Semien play it continue, or if Barreto comes up and plays short, they move Semien to second, so... I don't think
why they have Lowry. He's a starting caliber player.
That's exactly right. He can go to the bench and they don't care. Like, you know, I mean,
I like Semien more if he's playing full time.
Yeah. Well, Semyon's going to be leading off, you know,
maybe,
I think you're discounting Semien. We're going to have a discussion. I'm going to have you on the Oakland A's, preview podcast, and we'll hash this one out.
That's fine.
There was a couple other names I saw, Chris Owings. If healthy, I'll take Chris Owings. All right. What about Jonathan Villar?
I'd take VR over him. Over Anderson, yeah.
Here's a name I won't take over him, but I won't be drafting either of him. Dansby Swanson.
Yeah, Anderson.
Yeah, I'll take Anderson too, but I'm not drafting either. All right, let's move on. Anybody else in the offense you care about?
No, to be honest. I mean...
Charlie Tilson could be somewhat interesting if he's healthy this year and he's leading off. But again, that's for me AL only.
It got a lot of buzz last year prior to the season starting, which I found kind of odd.
Yeah.
Like draft time last year, he was getting drafted a ton.
Didn't he have a huge Arizona Fall League? I think that's what it was. He had like a huge Arizona Fall League.
Yeah, they got injured like he usually does. So,
all right, let's move on to starting rotation. Lucas Giolito could be interesting. I know you've been a big Ronaldo Lopez fan in the past, and I've been a huge detractor of his.
That's Matt, the Lopez fan. I like Lopez, but Matt's the one that's like kind of over the top on him. Maybe you can talk about Lopez with Matt in the prospect minute, but
is he still considered a prospect?
Probably not at this point, but you can at least talk about it with him. But I'm off Giolito. Giolito, until he shows me that he has regained some velocity and his command is better, I'm completely off. I don't have any faith in Giolito at all. Lopez is kind of in the same boat, but with better upside, but I still think he's a reliever long term. So
I think he'll be a very good reliever. But I, you know, having watched a few of Lopez's outings, I don't think he's the guy that's ever going to be able to turn a lineup over three times.
Yeah.
I
agree.
You know,
he's got two pitches.
Yeah, exactly. I think he would be, you know what? I think he'd be really great in a like long relief type role. Like, hey, you know, you can see an order, three innings here, four innings there, you know, see an order once and a half times, you know, but after that, I think he struggles without the third pitch. I think he becomes predictable. And I think he's going to get hammered as a long-term starter, especially if they want him to go 5, 6, 7 innings. I just don't see that he's going to ever be a consistent guy.
No, his fly ball percentage got up to almost 50% last year. They tried to get him throwing first pitch strikes more, which he did more of, but it also did a really bad, it affected his strikeout rate really badly. He had a 5.7 strikeout per nine, which is not like him in the minor leagues. That's not his profile. So if you want to continue to leverage his high skills and ability to strike out guys, you need to throw him in the bullpen so that he can use those two pitches to a maximum level. And right now, when he's starting, it's not going to be able to do that. So I'm out on Lopez, at least for a fan as a starter for this year.
Okay. Any other pitchers you want to talk about? Carlos Rodon, he's
probably not returning late until late. I guess we can ask whether he's worth a draft pick or not. I'm worried about him long term.
I think if you've got unlimited DL spots, he's worth stashing.
Yeah.
But most leagues don't, and with the way the 10-day DL rules, it wasn't just the 10-day DL rules. I think it was just we had a huge amount of injuries last year, especially to major players, that was a little bit unprecedented. And so I think that'll kind of work itself out a little bit. But most leagues, like, you're going to have to make decisions on guys, and you can't just stash Rodon all year in your DL and hope that he makes it out of it. Outside of really deep formats where you can get him cheap and maybe keep him, like if you're an AL only and you can draft him for a couple bucks and hold on to him for maybe 2019, I don't have a ton of faith in Carlos Rodon right now. Yeah.
This is the second time we're waiting on too. Yeah. We had to wait on last year, mm-hmm. and he progressed and got better as the season went on, but now once again he's injured, and the shoulder has always been something that we've been worried about, and now like he's going down with a shoulder injury, so it's really tough to bank on it. But I do think he's worth a flyer if you have maximum DL spots, like you said.
Yeah. Into the bullpen, which is a huge mess in itself. Any chance you're rostering any of these guys? I know a lot of people like to dumpster dive for saves and stuff, but this is not a situation I'd be dumpster diving into.
You can probably get Manaea for free, ultimately. He did have nine saves.
Yeah, but, like, getting him for free and getting those nine saves, like, comes at what cost?
A 4 ERA plus a...
A 4.53 ERA. Not just
yeah,
a 4 ERA
Well, the 2 months
plus.
That he had the 2 months he had the job, he ended up having close to a 4 ERA. 1.4 whip. Really bad, obviously. But he just strike out a ton of guys, and that's the one calling card for him, but he never gets ahead and counts.
4.5 per nine.
Yeah, it's a problem, and he never gets ahead. That's part of the reason. He had, in those 2 months, 47% first pitch strike rate, 59% in September, which was a lot better, but we definitely can't bank on that. Just a guy that's inconsistent is the best way to put him. But if he's free and he's going to get you saves, then you can kind of supplement the rest of your team with guys that are better in whip, better at walk rate, in that area.
I'm just not going to do it. It's too much of a detriment for a team.
Chances he keeps the job, though, are bad. So I'm not really on board.
The chances this team wins 60 games this year is bad.
Very bad. Very bad. So, over-under on saves for him is probably like 20, and I would say it's borderline under,
I wouldn't take the over on that. Like, even with really good odds, it's just not going to happen. All right, that's going to wrap this episode up. I can't believe we just went 30 minutes on the Chicago White Sox.
It was on other things, though. Mostly.
Yeah, it mostly was covering other shit. So that's going to wrap us up. Mike, what do you tell people where you can reach, what you're working on?
Yeah, reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. We're going to be doing that great fantasy baseball invitational. That's going to be a lot of fun. We have the draft guide coming out for FWFB this year, which is going to be awesome. Keep listening to the team previews. I'll be doing a bunch of those. And I'll continue writing for Baseball HQ this year. So, yeah, check it all out.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Definitely give us a rating review. Helps us out. 5 stars. We'll get you entered and win a bunch of cool stuff, including spots in our listener league or T-shirts. Even have bottles of alcohol I can give away because I don't drink. So why am I still holding on to these things?
Yeah, what? What are you doing? You're waiting for the great relapse, the big Mason relapse at some point? Is that what's happening?
I figure at some point, my whole life will implode, and then at least I've got 3 really nice bottles of bourbon sitting in my closet for the last 3 years. So,
well, your wife will have no patience. One sip and you're done, my friend. So
she'll probably see me take one sip and then drink the other 2 bottles.
They hit you over the head with one of them.
This turned dark really fast. But
yeah, really dark. Really, all you had to say was we're giving away liquor, and it turned out a really dark path.
Yeah, just I don't know. Anyways, you can read all my work at FanGraphs, Fantasy Alarm, FanTrax, hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and that's gonna wrap it up for this episode. So for Mike, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.